නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ දිත්තේකෝ අහං ආවුසෝ අනුපායෝ අනපායෝ අනිස්සිතෝ අප්පටිබද්ධෝ විප්පමුත්තෝ විසංයුත්තෝ විමරියාදි කතේන චේතසා විහරාමි ඉති. Dear venerable brother, dear friends in Dhamma, so we were discussing Kajjaniya Sutta for several weeks, and we were able to complete that. And so there actually we discuss how each and every aggregate is going to occupy us, occupy our mind, and basically Buddha interpreted strongly, telling that it is very much like this eating ourselves, eating the mind, because so much so there is a huge impact on the mind as we get cling to it, and again we are bound to it. Our mind is occupied with it. Our mind is so much hindered by that. So likewise, these aggregates are very interesting discussion. So therefore, Buddha's advice is to, as much as possible, abandon them, not to cling to them, not to grasp them, and to scatter them, not to amass them, and to disperse them, not to build up, to disassemble them. And on the other hand, if there are any kind of a defilement arise because of these aggregates, so we need to extinguish that defilement, extinguish that heat generated because of the defilement, rather than promoting the desire and promoting the defilement and getting burnt. So, and on the other hand, at the end of Kajjaniya Sutta, Buddha explained that when one has completed this task, then he become an arahant, and how he is continuing the process. Basically, he has nothing else to do. So that's why the term katakaraniyo is used in the sermons, in the suttas, because he has accomplished the task. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned that whatever he has to dismantle, he has already dismantled. And again, whatever the things that he need to scatter, he already has scattered. Now, therefore, there is no grasping, there is no building up. So he has already completed the scattering process, already completed the dismantling process. On the other hand, there is no grasping, and therefore there is no abandoning either, because in order to do some sort of an abandonment, one has to grasp. Now he has completely abandoned the things, so there is no abandonment, or neither there is a grasping, and there is no any kind of kindling, burning, and there is no extinguishing either, because he has completely extinguished the defilements, the burning effect coming from the defilements. Now, another interesting sutta talks about the path in many other ways, or many different perspectives, again available in Majjhima Nikaya. This is called Chabbisodhana Sutta. So I thought of discussing this sutta today, starting this sutta, because it has very interesting insights, and the theme discussed in the sutta is also very interesting. And actually, we can say the various methodologies explained in this sutta gives us a fair understanding about our own practice, and we can check, or we can verify our own practice with parallel to the sutta. And again, the different methodologies explained, or different sixfold purifications explained in the sutta, are very much like six kinds of Kammatthana, six kinds of method that one can attain arahanthood. And actually, even though the sutta's name is Chabbisodhana Sutta, literally means sixfold purity, the sutta contains only fivefold purity. So the sixth one is missing. So the commentator mentioned various options, alternatives, and we can discuss that also at the end of the sutta. So we can start with the sutta, how the fivefold purity is explained, and we can go one by one. Each and every purification that, as I mentioned, have some distinct qualities and have some differences, and therefore we can say different approaches are available. So on the other hand, it explains that it is not a single approach available, but many different approaches are available. And so that being verified, or that being questioned from a so-called Arahant. Now, Buddha was living in Savatthi at Jetha's Grove, another Pindika's park. At that time, Buddha himself addressed the bhikkhus. There is no any particular incident happened, or there is no any particular question came from the monks. Rather, Buddha himself taken the topic and he is addressing the monks. And he is mentioning like this. Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu makes a declaration of final knowledge thus. I understand. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. So basically, he mentioned that he has completed the task. What is necessary to be done is he has completed. Basically, he is an Arahant now. So he is declaring that he is an Arahant now. So Buddha takes this point out, and then he mentioned that bhikkhu's words should neither be approved nor disapproved. Now, this is an interesting thing. I mean, rather than simply immediately approving it and venerating him, worshipping him, and try to have a lot of faith in him. So rather than doing that, on the other hand, not disapproving, rejecting him, blaming him, condemning him, so not doing even that. So not going to these both sides, so that is not quick to accept or neither to reject. So the kind of a balanced approach that Buddha is mentioned. Because different people have different skills, and therefore there is a possibility that one may attain Arahanthood. So Buddha is there and the teaching is available, Sangha is practicing well. So there is a fair possibility that one can attain Arahanthood. But on the other hand, there are various pitfalls, various wrong methods or wrong misguidings available. So therefore one can easily get misled as well, and especially due to conceit one can easily get misled. And even in the Vinaya Pitaka, it is very much like exempted. Even if one is saying that he is an Arahant, even though he is not really an Arahant, it can happen due to higher conceit. One can overestimate oneself. As a result of that, one can claim that he is an Arahant. And then he can even declare among the Sangha or among the others. So these things are possible, and even these things are interestingly discussed by the Buddha himself. So you can see, I mean, how openly Buddha discussed these points, rather than keeping it aside, or rather than avoiding discussing these things. Because in certain other religions, I mean, these kinds of explanations are not quite common, because these are these kind of things, I mean, they want to keep hide, so that, I mean, you have to come and see. Here also, actually, there is an invitation coming from the Dhamma to come and see, and that is come and see practically, not just through the books. Rather, one has to experience it, and then one has to verify it. Now here the methodology or the criteria Buddha mentioned is based on this fivefold purification. So each and every question is based on a particular purification method. Now those are the ones actually we are quite interested, because those gives us a lot of insight into the practice. Now the first Buddha mentioned, without approving or disapproving, a question should be put thus. Friend, there are four kinds of expression rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. What four? Now, you know, I mean, based on the faculties that we are communicating with the external world, through the eyes we are able to see various sights, through the ears we are able to hear various sounds, through the nose, we can experience various odors. Through the tongue, we can experience various states or flavors. Through the body, we can experience various tactile sensations. And these three, actually the nose, tongue, and the body, taken together, and it is mentioned sensing. So these are sensations. So one can sense the external world using these three senses. On the other hand, there is another faculty, that is the mind, the cognition. So one can cognize what has to be cognized. So therefore, in an overview, that complete communication between a person and the external world happen these six sense bases, and it is somewhat summarized into four methods using the eye, using the ear, using the senses, and then using the mind. One speaks the seen as it was seen, one speaks of the heard as it was heard, one speaks of the sensed as it was sensed, one speaks of the cognized as it was cognized. And basically, one may have some sort of an experience when one is using one's faculties, and based on that experience, one may start to speak, one may start to react, or one may start to communicate with another person. So Buddha is using this criterion as the first one to verify how this particular monk used this criterion, used this methodology, or used this communication, or the interaction between himself and the outside world. So this is the first criterion Buddha wants to verify. Now he is asking, these friends are the four kinds of expression rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. How does the Venerable One know, how does he see regarding these four kinds of expression, so that through not clinging his mind is liberated from the taints? Now in a way, the argument goes like, now Buddha has seen it perfectly. He is the fully enlightened, he is the accomplished one. So now from this particular monk, so whoever the questioning monk has to ask the question with respect to his own experience, his own idea, how would you think that Buddha has achieved it? Particularly here the question is with respect to the communication, with respect to the interaction between the outside world using the senses. So that is the question. Bhikkhus. When a bhikkhu is one with taints destroyed, who has lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached the true goal, destroyed the fetters of being, and is completely liberated through final knowledge, this is the natural way for him to answer. Now, this is a natural way for him to answer. This is another interesting thing. Now Buddha highlights, now when you are putting this question to a monk who is properly enlightened, or properly he has become an arahant, now he may naturally answer like this. It is not that he is going to see a book and verify what Buddha has mentioned, what is stated there, and now remembering it and then coming and answering you a question. Rather, he has to come it from his own experience. Now he is very much like tallying his experience with the question. Whatever the question that the monk has asked, now he is tallying with his own experience. Now it's a kind of a answer given based on the experience, not from a book knowledge, or not from out of faith, or not kind of a borrowed knowledge. Now it's a kind of an experiential knowledge. He has seen it properly. Now there is no problem in answering it quickly, naturally. So that's why Buddha highlights, this is a natural way for him to answer. So this could be the natural way. Now here the answer is very interesting, and we can see various, say, meditation techniques or methods are fairly in line with this answer. And it has to be. because this is the final attainment that now we are talking. And Arahant is the final attainment, Aranthud. So he has attained using this kind of a methodology. So if this methodology is tallying with our own kind of a practice, so that means we are also very much following the same criterion. We may not be Arahant, but our, say, methodology is fairly in line with this answer. If it is so, I mean, we can be happy. Yes, to some extent, I am following the same thing. If not, I mean, if we feel that we have taken an entirely different path, entirely different methodology with respect to this given explanation, answer, then that means we have gone somewhere wrong. So that's why, I mean, these suttas are quite interesting, so that it gives us a lot of confidence if we are doing the proper practice. On the other hand, if we are doing something wrong, then we can correct it. Now, the answer is giving like this. Now, with respect to seen, now this particular bhikkhu is answering, Ditteko ahang aso anupayo, anapayo, anissito, appatibaddo, vippamutto, visangyutto, vimariyadikatena chetasa viharami. Now, he is talking with respect to seen, with respect to heard, with respect to sensed, and with respect to cognized. Now, all the four communication methods, or all the four interactions, are explained, and how he has dealt with the seen, how he has dealt with the heard, and how he has dealt with the sensed, and how he has dealt with the cognized. So those points or those terms are very interesting. Friends, regarding the seen, I abide anupayo. Anupayo means unattracted. Anapayo means unrepelled. Anissito, independent. Appatibaddo, detached. Vippamutto, free. Visangyutto, dissociated. Vimariyadi katena chetasa, with a mind rid of barriers. Now, these are the areas that we need to closely examine, because one can see, so if one's meditation, if one's technique, whatever the methodology one has undertaken, is taking towards this direction, that means we are heading towards the goal. On the other hand, if one's practice is not heading towards this kind of an achievement, then we have gone somewhere wrong. Now, let's examine one by one. So, with respect to seeing, so now his mind is anupayo, not attracted. Now, typically, when we see something beautiful, it is quite natural that our mind get attracted there, and we start exploring it, examining more and more little things, so that we can become more delighted. And then we can even get a photograph. That's what people do today. And so we are very much obsessed with what we have seen. We are so interested. It is quite interesting. Now suppose in Sri Lanka nowadays going on a lot of chaos, and people are interested and people are quite involved. So they look at news, they look at papers, newspapers, listen to the news channels. So the mind is quite involved. And if it is attractive, then, I mean, the mind is fully involved, fairly absorbed to that. They don't know where they are. So they are fully in the scene. So like that. Suppose one is seeing a very beautiful flower, maybe a beautiful image, beautiful artwork. So you immediately get absorbed to it, immediately get attracted to it. And you are being very much like born into it. Suppose there is a very beautiful artwork. It is depicting a very interesting, very scenic beauty. Maybe a village site, countryside. Maybe once you see it, and you may, from the first glance, probably you get little attraction. And then you go closer and you want to see it properly. And now you are investigating each and every bit of it. And slowly you get absorbed it. Now you are fully within it. So that means typically we get attracted. So, but here, the Arahant's mind, on the other hand, during his training, So he has slowly prevented that process. Rather than getting attracted, rather than getting very much absorbed to it, now he is making kind of a distance. Now, this is why it is important to understand in the Satipatthana practice. So, how one can do a proper observation? So, actually, we can't even do a proper observation at the beginning. So, because sometimes we get too attracted, sometimes we get completely distracted, and we don't know the limit, we don't know the proper balance. So, that's why it is taking time to find out this proper balance. Say, for example, you are practicing Anapanasati, and there are some, it's a matter of looking at the breath, observing the breath. But even that is difficult because our mind get constantly distracted towards various other external things. Our mind is not interested of looking at the breath because breath is a very neutral phenomena. So, how to find the balance? Actually, before even going to the balance, we have to first of all establish mindfulness on the breath. So that would be the first step. Sato asa sati, sato passa sati. That's why Buddha mentioned. So one is mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out. So when one is trained in that, now one can say, okay, now I can spend, say, half an hour observing breath. Very less distractions. Now I can observe breathing. In breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. Okay, you are observing. Maybe you can even use some sort of a technique like naming, labeling, noting, counting, etc. But later, once you are capable, then you can abandon that and simply be with the breath with a silent mind. It's a kind of an observating mind, observing mind, and very calm. And slowly you may get what would be the, you may understand what would be the optimal energy that you need to spend there. Previously, you might understand, okay, I have unnecessarily invested a lot of energy. Too strongly I was trying to hold the breath. On the other hand, sometimes I haven't put enough energy, so that mind get distracted. Now you are slowly very much refining your practice, fine-tuning your practice, so that you are not wasting energy. No, you are being lethargic. Now you are maintaining the proper balance. Now this balance observation is very much a distant observation. It is not entirely a passive observation. It's not entirely interrupting the process, but kind of unbiased observation, unparticipated observation, non-judgmental observation. So that is where you are coming to this interesting balance, dedicated balance, where you are able to watch the breath with a balanced attitude. Now you don't feel lethargic, and now you don't feel either kind of attracted or maybe absorbed. You are very much maintaining that proper balance. Now, unattracted. On the other hand, anupayo, anapayo. Anapayo means unrepelled. Unrepelled. Because sometimes, I mean, when the object of observation is somewhat changing, it's not behaving as you wish, and your mind can get repelled from that. So, because it is not the way that you want, it is going through. So, you don't want to experience it then. Mind doesn't want to look at it. So, mind get distracted, mind get repelled. This is especially happens, suppose you are observing various feelings. Say you are experiencing a painful feeling. So at that time when it is pain, and most probably mind doesn't want to look at it, doesn't want to observe it, and even the observation can make it more intense. So easily mind can get repelled from the object. And on the other hand, I mean, when you are observing some pleasurable feeling, easily mind can get attracted, get absorbed, hooked up with the pleasurable feeling. But the proper observation is neither get hooked up, neither get attracted, neither get repelled. So you can maintain your proper observation even with the, say, painful feeling and even with the pleasurable feeling. Even with breathing, even with rising and falling, even with your posture. Or suppose you are observing maybe element characteristics everywhere. Suppose you are doing walking meditation. Even there, say you should be capable allowing the body to naturally walk, and that you are maintaining proper balance, and you are watching it like an outsider. So this perspective, this understanding, this proper observation is something that we have to practically develop. I mean, it's very difficult to understand this just through the book, just through the sermons, because you yourself have to know this balance. How to do a proper observation, how to do a non-judgmental observation, how to do an unparticipated observation, uninterrupted observation, without interfering in the process. But again, investigating it properly, you are not missing anything either. You are not neglecting anything, rather you are properly observing. So unattracted and unrepelled. Now, when one conducts this, then one can say, okay, I am doing a proper observation, correct observation. And this correct observation helps to develop various insights. Now, in order to reach this point, you have to practice a fair amount of time. And then, say, you are observing it for a long time, and you can maintain it for a long time. And now there's a higher chance that you are getting more and more insights. Say, for example, if you do this proper observation, then probably you can understand, okay, breathing is changing. At the beginning, it was longer, but now it is getting shorter. At the beginning, it was somewhat grosser, but now it is becoming refined. Say, you are observing the rising and falling. Probably at the beginning, say, you have observed that rising may be gross, and now it can become somewhat refined. So these kind of changes constantly happening, I mean, with our proper observation, clear comprehension, we are able to understand these differences. Now, and not only that, and slowly as you continue, even other sensations can arise. Now, when you are properly observing breathing, say your mind get more collected, fairly concentrated onto the breath, and now you are able to observe it closely, and various characteristics now you are able to understand, and as a result of that, so you get some sort of a fair understanding or comprehensive understanding about the breathing process. Actually, the breathing process represents one phenomena of this whole conditioned world. Rising and falling also similar, and whatever other sensations are also similar, so they represent kind of a sample of the whole experience that we are going through. We can't complete the whole experience, we can't complete each and every phenomena, but we are taking a sample of it and taking into our consideration. Now, say, as you are continuing, suppose that there are various sensations now arising in the body. Now you are watching them, observing them, and they again start behaving their own, and we are not interrupting them, we are not pushing them, we are not repelled by them, or we are not being attracted by them. We are non-judgmentally observing them, properly observing. So as we continue this observation, more and more our understanding broadens, because it is not that we are changing them, rather they themselves are changing. They have the inner characteristic, inner property to change. They can't stay constant. On the other hand, they are constantly changing. So now, with our own experience, we are observing this changing process. How things are rising and how things are changing. how things are quickly passing away. Not only that, actually, how at the beginning many things appear like one thing, as a one unit, one compact thing. But later, as our clear comprehension improves or refines, then we may understand it is not a single thing, it's a many things, it's a collection of so many things. So likewise, our understanding may grow. Now our refined observation, careful attention, careful observation help us to further and further understand their behavior. Now this is how that various insights are possible, like you are getting more understanding or thorough understanding about the impermanence, thorough understanding about the unsatisfactoriness, thorough understanding about the impersonal nature or the non-self nature. It is not that you are trying to program the mind or condition the mind, rather you are giving a fair opportunity for the mind to observe some conditioned phenomena. Then they themselves have to show their proper behavior, their proper characteristic. So that should be the proper way, correct method, rather than you trying to make something impermanent. Rather, you are observing, and that very observation helps you to understand, yes, they are impermanent. And even that insight is not just a one-time insight. Again and again, we have to continue it. And again, these insights are getting stronger and stronger. That's what we sometimes call as yathabhuta jnana dassana, seeing things as they truly are. So when we are continuing this, and at a given moment, okay, fair amount of understanding has grown, and we are constantly observing this whole process arising and passing away, as Buddha explained in the Satipatthana Sutta, samudaya dhammanupasseva viharati anu niro vayadhammanupasseva viharati, and one is continuing this observation. And as a result of that, you gain a fair understanding, okay, things are constantly changing. This kind of a changing process can't give me satisfaction. Existing satisfaction or prolonged satisfaction. It's quite vulnerable. And again, this process is beyond my control. It has its own causes and conditions. Therefore, it is impermanent and non-self. So likewise, various insights are now growing, and even that causes some kind of an impact of even your own behavior. Actually, you are observing behavior of conditioned phenomena. It may be bodily phenomena, it may be feelings, it may be thoughts, many things. But this very observation is causing some internal change within yourself. Because we are simply behaving as per our trends or habits available in the mind. Now this very observation is contributing to change that very habits. Change those thinking patterns. Now certain behavioral patterns may even change within you. Say for example, you are attracted to flowers. I mean, you are so fond of flowers and all sort of things. But slowly as you continue the process, may be that attraction may diminish. So likewise, various little changes may happen within your character. And this is an indication that something is going on. The insights are working. Not only on the cushion, but even within your character, these insights are operating. It has to be. And on the other hand, when these insights are grown to fair extent, say at a given moment, so the mind can let go of everything, and as a result of that, we can call this anisito, independent. So mind now become independent. Now this is a very temporary state. It is not that complete that you become liberated. Rather temporary, mind has let go of this very observation, which is observing various conditioned phenomena. Now it like to live alone. Mind like to live alone. Mind become independent. Anisito. Because it understood, I mean, it's a burden to look at this. It's a burden to go through this. it's a burden to have this. So that burdensome or that tiresome process is something that mind itself has to understand. I mean, we can understand it logically by going through the books or by listening to someone else's sermon, but that is not enough. It is enough when your mind has fairly grown to some extent. Suppose you are practicing Anapanasati or whatever the insight practice, and while you have reached fairly to that understanding, suppose someone is further explaining you the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature, which also contributes further to your understanding, that insight may further strengthen, and therefore this temporary freedom can happen. That is also possible. But on the other hand, fair amount of growth depends on the proper observation. So when the proper observation is going on at a given moment, okay, it has reached the threshold, and now mind lets go of everything, and now it becomes independent. That is where anisito. Now, as I mentioned, a yogi may experience it only for a short time, and now he has to further improve it. So he has to work out how to maintain this, how to prolong this. So the same thing, again and again he has to continue. So the next time he become more confident that, okay, when I am reaching to this level, okay, mind typically get freed, typically become independent. Now one is again and again developing the same practice. It is not necessary to be the same. I mean, same in the sense, say if you are able to achieve this using Kaya Anupassana, okay, you are repeating the same thing. Say you have achieved it using Vedana Anupassana, say you are repeating that. If it happened through Chitta Anupassana, let it happen. So as you are get more conversant with all these different techniques, actually now you can even transfer from one to the other, shift from one method to the other. Because all are showing the same thing. So all are contributing to the development of the wisdom. And likewise, more and more one become confident, now the freedom happens, this independence happens, and you can even maintain it for a while. And that is where detached appatibaddhu. Now you know, okay, mind is not bound to anything. Mind is not latched onto anything. Mind is not associating anything during this particular temporary period. Vipamutto, it is free. So mind has that capability, mind has that skill, potential to live free. But typically, our minds are programmed or habituated to attach, to grasp. So whenever you let go of one thing, it automatically goes and grasp another thing. Once you feel a little bored with that, automatically the mind goes and grasp another thing. So kind of a continuous process of grasping. So you get bored, again grasping, again bored, again grasping, again bored, again grasping. So likewise, a process is continuing. There is no any kind of a rest for the mind. Continuous grasping process. But here, by giving a support of mindfulness, giving a support of concentration, and giving the support of wisdom, now we are strengthening the mind so that it can live alone, it can maintain its freedom. And again, dissociated, visangyutto. Now it doesn't want anything. I mean, it has the capability, it has the skill, it is confident. Now it can live alone. It's very much like, say, a child at the beginning is quite dependent on the parents. So it's going to the mother for his breastfeeding, and then father for the confidence, safety, and again, so likewise, so dependent. But slowly the child is growing and learning and getting skills, how to talk, how to speak, how to deal with others, and he's getting more and more understanding. So slowly he's growing, and at a given moment now he is capable, he is now ready to go to the college alone. Now parents are not necessary to go after him, okay, now he is capable. Now that confidence has come to the child. Now assume that he is now going to the university, okay, now he can go alone and he has that confidence. Now the parents doesn't need to follow him, and parents also have to let go of him. Then only he become more and more confident. So similarly, here the mind also constantly dependent previously, fully dependent, fully grasping, fully entangled. But as a result of the practice, now it is catching the momentum, developing the momentum to be free, dissociated. And once it is done, now suppose that you are strengthening that process and you understood the process and now you are supporting that process, and now you can suppose that you can maintain it for half an hour. Now say now you are developing it even in the walking meditation. So there it may be difficult because so many distractions are there, your eyes are open, so many things you can heard, you can hear. So likewise, more distractions are there, but still you continue the same practice, and now you are capable of maintaining that even in the walking meditation. And there you may understand, okay, mind has no boundary. Because typically when the mind has grasped something, so mind is bounded to that object. Suppose that you are grasping a particular cloth. So your mind is fairly focused onto that cloth. And the size of the cloth limits your mind. Because your mind is grasping and your mind has a particular shape, your mind has particular volume, limit. On the other hand, mind also has get limited now. Because the mind has grasped some limited object, so the mind itself has become limited. But on the other hand, when mind has nothing to grasp, so it is basically free, very much like the whole space, and there is no boundary. So that is why vimariyadikatena chetasa. So with the mind rid of barriers, there is no barrier, there is no limit, there is no boundary. You can't find out any kind of a limit of the mind. I mean, there may be kind of a limitless awareness available. So this experience helping us to understand in a way the capabilities available in the mind. So far, our mind being blocked, being limited, being restricted, constrained onto something. But mind has the capacity to become boundless, to become limitless, to become measureless. So that skill now one has experiencing, one is experiencing, and properly say he is growing that. Now when you are thinking about this kind of a practice, inside practice, so that means that we are heading towards the final achievement. And so this sutta further explains about how one may dealt with what is heard, how one may dealt with what is sensed, how one may dealt with what is cognized, and similar expression is given. And again, we can connect this with the Bahya Sutta. There are also some very similar explanation given by the Buddha. Tasma te bahiye evan sikkitabba. So Buddha asks Venerable Bahya to restrain like this. Ditte dittamattam bhavissati. So when you are now after one has achieved that temporary freedom, now he is living with that temporary freedom, and he is very much like making it abundant. And now the second level of development is now just be there. Just maintain this freedom. Avoid further grasping. Just now try to consolidate this freedom. So there Buddha explained kind of a restrainment. So when now you see something, just limit it, just seeing. Don't go and involve with it. Don't go and bound with it. Don't go and grasp. And don't make many thoughts about it. Keep the mind quiet. Similarly, when you heard something, just doing the same thing. Don't go and grasp, don't go and limit yourself, get involved with it. Rather, maintain the serenity of the mind, rather maintain the unentangled nature of the mind. Then, mute muttamattam bhavissati. So, when you have sensed using the nose, tongue and the body, so just maintain the mind. Keep the purity of it. Don't let the whatever the sensed get impure the mind, pollute the mind. And vinyate vinyata mattam bhavisati. Even when you cognize something, just keep it for the mere cognition. Don't allow the mind to get occupied with it. Now, when one achieves that temporary freedom, now this is how one has to consolidate that. One has to cultivate that. So, and again, the interesting point here, when one is doing that, then Buddha mentioned, so, tato tvam bahya natena, then you are not there. And you are not making a self there. Suppose that you are seeing a particular sight. So if you get attracted to it, then you are there. But on the other hand, if you are not attracted by that, you are maintaining your independence, then you are not there. Yato tvam bahya natena, tato tvam bahya natatha. And if you are not doing that, and even now you are not here, you are not making a self here, thinking that I am seeing it. You are not very much like identifying with it. You are not making a self even here. And if you are not doing both, then there is no you in between either. And then Buddha mentioned this is the freedom. So this is the end of suffering. So this explanation, this advice has to be cultivated. Whenever we see, whenever we hear, whenever we sensed, whenever we cognize, so this advice has to be well looked after, well practiced. Then we can say, okay, slowly we are consolidating our freedom, consolidating that experience that Buddha is mentioning. You are not attracted, you are not repelled, your mind is now independent, detached, free, dissociated, and the mind is rid of barriers, no boundaries. So this is the first explanation of first criterion given in this Chabbisodhana Sutta, and we can go through the other explanations as well. And actually Buddha does not stop here. So after getting the answer, he is telling, okay, that you have to be you can be little happy about it, but don't fully satisfied, then now you can go to the next section. And we can discuss the next section on next week. And with that, I'll conclude today's Dhamma Sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. For anyone that like to ask a question, you may raise your hand, or you may also send them via the chat.
Okay, everybody is freed. There are no questions, no entanglements. So everything seems cool. Isn't it, Jennifer?
I guess so. After last sutta and this sutta,
yeah.
Everybody reaching arhanthood.
Yes, yes. Happy to see that. By the way, I mean, these suttas are very interesting and quite insightful, and helping to verify our own practice, to develop confidence if we are doing it properly. And so therefore, I mean, that's why the whole purpose of the sutta teaching session, and to get some insights from the Buddha's teaching and directly from the suttas, so that we are developing more confidence. Yeah.
Yeah. you. I'd like to invite Mahisha for the first question. Mahisha, you may unmute.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. I have like a kind of a general question. I think, I don't know whether I have asked this before as well. As you said that when we start with the mindfulness and then sampajanya and then we go on like that and then we focus on breath to gain the mindfulness first and then go for sensations or thoughts, whatever comes to the mind, and we keep on watching that, and then we come to a place that we don't actually get much thoughts, but its mind is settled and now it can stay still for a while, and then what do you call as anisitta state, and then so while staying there for a while, and then sometimes the thoughts comes and go, we watch that, and then a particular point in time we go to the unconscious mode for some time and then come back again and then keep on with the mind like that and go backward forward. So is that the thing that you explained in this today's sutta? Just I want to verify.
No, actually at the beginning we can't say that we are reaching the complete independent state in one shot, because there's a certain amount of wisdom developed, and gradually mind is letting go. Say you are not grasping seeing, you are not grasping heard, you are not grasping whatever the sensed, and you are not grasping even thoughts. But that the very feeling that you may feel, and you might even get little attracted to that, so it's a kind of a comforting feeling. So mind get collected, and you can even little attracted to that. So likewise, a certain amount of attraction, certain amount of association may still be available. So that's why, and again, the thoughts may not penetrating, but still may available
come
at the vicinity. Yeah, come and go, available at the vicinity. But slowly as we are progressing, now thoughts may go a little far away, and now it is not even coming to the vicinity. And you get more refined kind of independence. So your mind get more purified. So I feel, therefore, when you reach the proper balance, probably you may come completely dissociated, completely now not associating anything, completely independent. But at the beginning, you can't say, okay, I am, the mind is fully liberated. But it may still have certain impediments. Later, even those impediments are removed, and you may reach the pure form of, say, even this is temporary freedom, but it is pure form of freedom. So then one can say, okay, now you are perfectly anisitta. Sorry?
It stays for a while.
Like, it stays for a while,
it's not
yes.
tangling with anything, it just stays for a while. Another thought comes, getting distracted.
Yeah.
Because of the thought.
Yeah, and again, the another point is, now at the beginning you may doing it with the help of concentration. So the concentration very much like operating like a kind of a bunker, kind of a wall to protect you, to protect the mind from the distractions. But later as we are developing, so this protection coming from concentration has to also dissolve. And you should be capable of maintaining it with less effort. On the other hand,
without any boundaries.
Because if the mind is somewhat concentrated,
so longer, how much longer we can stay, that what we can feel like we are improving.
Yes, yes.
In the path. Is that so?
Longer plus less effort. Because at the beginning, you need fair amount of effort and concentration to maintain this.
True.
But later you don't need much concentration, nor you need much effort, but you can effortlessly, with shallow concentration, you can maintain it.
I got the point, but the other thing that related to that I want to ask now is, say we in our day-to-day life, when we get something distracting us, you know, someone said something, or you know, you heard a news or something, and then if we still can could bounce back, okay, this is it, I shouldn't, you know, tangle with this situation, and if we can take a step back quickly than before, that shows that it's kind of, I'm in the right direction now.
Yes,
my mind reminds me.
Correct.
That means I have like mindfulness, okay, this is something that I shouldn't tangle.
Mm-hmm.
And then what should I do? Then I focus on something that I can concentrate my mind to be still.
No, you don't need to concentrate. Rather, if you can keep your mind unentangled, so unassociated, anisita. So that is why, I mean, in the practice it is mentioned at the beginning we don't know about this state where the mind can be kept, when the mind can be kept on this anisita state is not available to us at the beginning, but later
we don't know the state.
Exactly, we don't have any practical experience.
Now we know it, so we have to quickly be able to get back to that state.
Exactly. So that's why Buddha again and again refer, that's etam panitang etam santang yadidam upekkha. So this is the equanimous state. So this is a kind of an equanimous and again kind of a balanced state of the mind, and it doesn't attach or doesn't grasp to anything, and this is a new state of mind that we have understood through our practice. So that has to be taken as a kind of a refuge, again and again to return to it, again and again to return to that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I got to understand.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mante.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. For the next question, I'd like to invite Chita Devi.
Thank you, Jennifer. Now, my question also follows from the previous one, Mante.
Yeah.
Now, I remember in one of your talks, you said it's like this, when the mind is sort of stable, it's like... when you're tired, you sit down and you know, you feel that kind of comfort. Would that be right if I said that?
Yes.
So there is I don't know whether I have got it right, but I experience a kind of comfort, you know, and I can be in that, because you know, it's a comfort if the mind is not tired and we are not thinking so much and we are not concentrating so much. It's a comfort, I think.
Yeah.
But it is not an uncomfortable comfort, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So I can be in that state for some time. So
right.
But it's a kind of comfort, if you know what I mean.
Yes, definitely.
It's not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We kind of feel stable and relaxed.
Correct. Definitely. It has to be very relaxed state.
I can interpret it as a pleasant state. So would that be right if I said that?
Yeah, we can say so. It is not a pleasantness that we have derived from the sense faculties, say by looking at sight, sound, smells, that's a thing. So that's why, I mean, there's a kind of a unworldly kind of pleasantness, which is, deprived from the typical sense objects that you have gained through your understanding, through your own practice. So that's why it is called the niramisa.
Yeah, because it's a bit like that. The sukha, but less. Because there is a kind of ease.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what I want to tell, but to just check with you. Then the other thing is, what Mahesh said about the general life. We have to be able to, it's not only meditating and bhante, we have to be able to put this now into the real life.
Exactly.
When unpleasant situations or, you know, not so nice things are happening, we have to be able to put this whole thing there.
Exactly.
So that is always not easy. Is that right,
Bhante? Yes. So that is where actually we are strengthening ourselves. Because at the beginning we are developing it and we are having it with very say in a laboratory level. Say you have to have
yes.
kind of a silence, you need to have a very good posture, say you need to have proper silence, and enough concentration has to be developed, enough wisdom has to be developed, then only the state is available. So very controlled environment. But later,
yes.
slowly
yes.
you are trying to achieve it even with less facilities, very much like.
Yeah. So in those situations, it is a kind of practice. It's like an athlete practicing, isn't that right?
Definitely, definitely.
Because we have to put it, it's not easy, so we have to have a lot of restraint.
Definitely.
because the human nature is to want to, if somebody says something which is not very nice, then the human nature wants to say something back. Isn't
yes.
that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we quickly react and we get quickly
yes.
react and we still murmur inside the mind. And again,
yes.
even once you return back home, you still have kind of a revenge in the mind, grudge in the
yes.
mind. I mean,
mm-hmm.
these we need to clearly see, clearly notice, and slowly let go of things. And then later, you may understand, maybe. During the conversation, probably you may get hurt. You may feel uncomfortable. You may feel uneasy. You may feel little belittled. But
yes.
you may understand, okay, now I feel little uncomfortable. I feel little, say, restricted. But now you are not keeping it for a long time. You quickly
yes.
pacify that,
yes.
quickly let it go, and come back or return back to the normal state, non-grasping state, quite quickly.
Yes, yes, but it's not easy, no? But
yeah, 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 definitely not easy. It takes time. Definitely,
then,
it takes time.
Yeah, I mean, there are times now. When I start worrying about the children or whatever it is, then
mm-hmm.
I tell myself, well, you know, if you can do something about it, that's fine. But if you can't, then you just got to let go. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's why I mean.
If you can't, you're worrying something about some situation and then, but you can't do anything about it.
Mm.
So then I just try to block it off my mind.
I mean, that means that you have done enough, you have taken proper action. I mean, that is you understood, okay, now you have done my part. Now that is,
mm-hmm.
now it involves their involvement, their contribution. And
yes.
if they are not doing
yeah.
it, I mean, then I can't help.
Exactly.
So,
so
I mean,
I, that is what I have started doing now because
yeah.
otherwise you get entangled. No?
Yes.
So now we are trying to unentangle. No? But
yes, yes. And on the other hand, we need to know properly what is our limitations.
Yes. So that's what I'm now trying to do.
Yeah.
Trying to read it. Now, of course, we have to do it deliberately, trying to detach oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not easy,
Bhante,
no?
Yes. Because mind is used to and habituated to grasp. But now we are trying to do the opposite. We are improving ourselves, we are developing wisdom, and again showing the mind that is useless to go and grasp, and it is better, comfortable to stay free, unentangled, non-grasping. So likewise, it's a kind of a... That's why it is a practice. That's why we are training.
And the other thing is, when we come to a relaxed state in our meditation, we have to be aware that we are in that state, right? We have to tell ourselves, now this is what we want.
It is not that we attach to that state, rather we are fully aware of it.
Aware of it, yes. Because otherwise it's useless, no, if you're not aware of it.
Yes.
Then you're just sitting and waiting without being aware of a situation which you should be aware of.
Yes, yes.
And the other thing you said, you mentioned the Yatha Bhuta Jnana Dasana
mm-hmm.
in relation to insights.
Mm-hmm.
So is that term used only in relation to insights?
Basically, yes, because I mean, you are Yathabodhi Jnana Dasana means you are knowing things as they truly are. Basically, to understand their real nature, their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-grasping nature, and maybe even we can extend into the Paticca-samuppada that you know how things are dependent, how one depends on another thing. So likewise, more and more aspects of the wisdom.
So that is that is a state where you are having realizations, is that right?
Yeah, we can say, I mean, we can, ha having insights. So that's
That
a.
is like impermanence.
Yeah, yeah,
So now
yeah.
we are seeing certain things arising and passing away. That is impermanence. So
Yes,
that's
yes.
Yathabhutanam, right?
Yes, 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 yes.
And
So
then
it.
sometimes we see non-self because we are not in control of that particular situation in
Correct.
meditation, and things are happening.
Correct.
And then that is also
Yathabodhijñānadarsana, yes.
yathabhutanānadarsana. You are
Yes.
seeing you have no control, so there is no self there because it
Yes.
is a cause and effect,
Correct.
right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Bhakti, thank you very
Yeah,
much.
yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Bhante, that's the last question that I've received.
Okay, fine. So then actually we have spent a little bit more than 1 hour today, and today is the Poya day, and we have Nisarna Vanaya Poya program also. Therefore, we'll wind up the session now. And so far, we have accumulated some merits to going through this Sutta teaching session. And let's share these merits with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And let's wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු ශාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමු සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමු සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමු සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු